thought I was going to be late. Did y'all hear the latest late-breaking news from the Kavanaugh hearings? Ruth Bader Ginsburg came out that she was groped by Abraham Lincoln. I thought I was going to have to get back there, but we don't.
Maybe there's something wrong with you and I. The fact that we don't laugh at rape jokes, the fact that we don't engage in racism, the fact we're not afraid of gay people, the fact that we tend to believe survivors. It's my default position to believe survivors, and it's not a hard thing. I do not feel like I am going out on a limb. I remember hearing people talk about, you know, voting for Trump over Hillary, and even they would admit that they were going out on a limb. They just weren't sure what was going to happen. And now, every day, some conservative politician makes a rape joke. It's so wild. Today, we're going to delve into right-wing world in a way that we never have before. Yo, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 267. I am the one and only Melvin. Thank you so much for being here.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
So it's pretty clear what happened right there, and no one really disputes it. Well, I say no one with an asterisk. The president got laughed at. He went to the UN. They're not used to hearing this crap, and he got laughed at. So that's what you and I as regular, normal people, that's what you and I hear. But there's this constituency in the Trump base, you know, and I think the vast majority of the Trump base, I say 90-95%, is made up of these hardcore, he can do no wrong, everything that he says is true. That for them hearing this, they go, oh my God, not only is he the greatest president ever, but he also is a comedian. Did you hear how he made every, no. He got laughed at. That's what normal people hear. Unless you're a conservative. And then, of course, who knew how funny our president was?
Well, I don't think I've ever seen an American president humiliated on the international stage the way that Trump was just humiliated. You know, Americans may be used to his boasts, but the international leaders who were in that room not only were not used to them, they don't have any time for that. And if he's going to go and say complete nonsense like he's achieved more, you know, in the UN, where they remember that there were American presidents who led to the creation of the UN, who won, you know, peace for the world in mm-hmm. you know, two world wars, et cetera. Well, he gets that kind of reaction.
It's pretty clear. There's no dispute. The guy got laughed at. He's an effing joke. On the world stage, he's an effing joke. All that time you were complaining about, my God, we're just not respected in the world anymore. Your president just got laughed at on the world stage. And that's the way normal people see it. But of course, not all of us are normal.
Trump is just wiping the floor with people at the UN today. He's wiping the floor with the Iranians. He's wiping the floor with that little Trudeau guy up in Canada. He's wiping the floor with the macaroni guy in France.
That's a pretty terrifying disconnect. I remember hearing the Two Americas speech given by John Edwards, and he was talking about sort of the upper echelon and then everybody else. But I think it's much more stark than that, and that particular description doesn't do a lot of justice. I think the Two Americas really lies here. Those who believe the truth, those who do not. And it's not that they just do not. They are opting to not believe things that are demonstrably true. So there's an article written at Alternate that was published earlier this year. The headline, An Insider Explains How Rural Christianity, White America, Has a Dark and Terrifying Underbelly. Quoting here, as the election of Donald Trump is being sorted out, a common theme keeps popping up from all sides. And that theme is, Democrats failed to understand white working class fly over America. You remember hearing that? You still hear that. And I don't care what news channel you turn on, you still hear it every day. Trump supporters are saying this. Progressive pundits are saying this. Talking heads across all forms of the media are saying this. Even some Democratic leaders are saying this. And it doesn't matter how many people say it. It's complete BS. It is an intellectual, linguistic sleight of hand meant to draw attention away from the real problem. The real problem isn't East Coast elites who don't understand or care about rural America. The real problem is that rural Americans don't understand the causes of their own situations and fear. And they have shown no interest in finding out. And they don't want to know why they feel the way they do or why they're struggling, because they don't want to admit that it is in large part, it is because of the choices that they have made and the horrible things that they have allowed themselves to believe.
Texas Board of Education is raising eyebrows with a controversial decision to remove certain historical figures from the classroom, but keep others. The preliminary vote eliminates mention of figures like Hillary Clinton and Helen Keller. The decision will be finalized or amended in November.
We're talking about the United States in 2018. In the same vote, the board reinserts references to Moses in a high school government unit that highlights individuals whose principles of laws and government institutions informed the American founding. Wait. Officials say the move will be streamlined social studies lessons for 5.4 million public school children.
So Texas, and I've mentioned this before, is the largest purchaser of textbooks. So their school board, if you're on the Texas school board, you have a lot of sway because you get to say what the rest of us are learning about. You wonder how civics got wiped out of so many of our social studies and histories books. That's how. Because in Texas, they don't care. But do they really not care? I would submit to you that they do. And what is happening now? Think about that. Helen Keller and Hillary Clinton. What are they going to say about President Bill Clinton? That he was never president? That he was single? What are they going to say about him? But this is where they've staked their flag. This is what they're going to do. And if they do this, this becomes a permanent decision. These same books they're writing in Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh. Okay? Two people whose entire existence has been devoted to destroying intellectualism in America, fighting against facts. And they're writing them in and writing out other historical figures, and not just historical figures, but writing out women.
And, you know, a lot of people don't know, you know, we hear a lot of talk about Trump, we hear a lot of talk about Clinton and the national politics, but this board is elected, and most people in Texas probably don't know who their State Board of Education representative is, but they actually do have a say in who sits on that board if they, you know, if they get involved in voting.
Is this a final decision? Is it reversible or amenable in any way?
They can change it. In November, they're meeting again, and that's when they'll take a final vote on the curriculum. And this board has complete control. They can put in anyone they want before then, but in November, that decision becomes final. And then in a few years, when they write the new textbooks for social studies, they'll base it on this curriculum.
Quick note, if you don't know who your school board members are, find out. I recently became painfully aware of my own school board members when I had to march on the picket lines with my wife for 2 weeks. The way it ended was we got the raise they were asking for. There's some give and take in contract negotiations, but we got a lot of what we were asking for, and that's what you have to do. And it was at that point, when walking on the picket lines for 2 weeks, not knowing what was going to happen next, that I decided that I might want to run for school board, because holy hell, these guys have a lot of power. And think about this. Texas gets to do this. Eventually, these things will come out of our history books. Back to this article, quoting here, in Deep Red America, the white Christian God is king, figuratively and literally. Religious fundamentalism has shaped most of their belief systems. Systems built on a fundamentalist framework and not conducive to introspection, questioning, learning, or change. When you have a belief system built on fundamentalism, it isn't open to outside criticism, especially by anyone not a member of your tribe and in a position of power. The problem isn't that coastal elites don't understand rural Americans. The problem is that rural America doesn't understand itself and will never listen to anyone outside of its bubble. It doesn't matter how understanding you are, how well you listen, what language you use. If you're viewed as an outsider, your views will be automatically discounted. I've had hundreds of discussions with rural white Americans, and whenever I present any information that contradicts their entrenched beliefs, no matter how sound, how unquestionable, how obvious, they will not even entertain the possibility that it might be true. Their refusal is a result of the nature of their fundamentalist belief system and the fact that I am the enemy because I'm an educated liberal. At some point during the discussion, they will say, well, that's just your education talking, derisively, derogatorily, as a general dismissal of everything that I've said. They truly believe that this is a legitimate response because to them, education cannot be trusted. Education is the enemy of fundamentalism because fundamentalism, by its very nature, is not built on facts. So this article over at Alternate is written by a gentleman who grew up in the Deep South, who grew up around a lot of conservative politics, who grew up hearing the racist jokes, who grew up hearing about how the South will rise again, and how the Civil War was really little more than the war of Northern aggression because the Northerners were trying to blah, blah, blah. You've heard all this stuff before. What makes Trump effective is the fact that he, even though he is an elite, he's got tons of money, tons of power, although I still maintain that he's broke. But let's just take perceptions. Even though he has all of this, he has spent his life screwing people over, both rich and poor. He spent his life annihilating the environment, spent his life as a misogynist, as someone who sexually assaults women, by his own admission. But to conservatives, he's able to talk to conservatives, and they listen to him. And worse, they believe him. How? How does he do this? Well, there's been a campaign for a long time to, and I got air quotes here, educate people in the South, in these Trump states. It's Hannity, it's Limbaugh, it's all of these right-wing radio hosts. And of course, it's Fox News, which is available on basic cable. And Fox takes a loss on the money they make just so that they can get into more homes. And they constantly go in people's radios and their trucks, at work, at truck stops, at Flying J truck stops, of course, in people's homes. And they go on the TV and they tell people exactly what they want to hear. It's not true, the things that they're saying on conservative media, but they're telling, and then these people come together and then they start talking and they start sharing these right-wing beliefs that they heard, these right-wing stories that they heard. I've gotten into these conversations with my own father because I consume a lot of conservative media, and I will go to my father, and my father, almost as if playing an intellectual, will stroke his chin and he will say, aha, I heard this today and I think this and I think that. And I squint my eyes because no, you don't. And no, you didn't. I know exactly where you got that because you're not even putting it in your own words. That's a direct quote from something that Ann Coulter said earlier today. And I'll try to bring it up in the most gingerly way possible. But that only further enrages them because you know what? I'm just a liberal. And I just don't know. And you know what else? I'm a hypocrite. And I can just go to hell because my people are ruining America and so on and so forth. And you've heard it all. But Trump takes these lies, which he may not even believe himself, that's been put in conservative media for years, that's been fed to all these what we now call Trump people. And he repeats these things back to them. I've always learned the fastest way to get somebody to trust you is to tell them things that they already know.
My experience of more than 75 Trump rallies during the campaign and many more since he's been president is when supporters of Trump arrive, They already feel satisfied that something important is going on. They've attached themselves to it. But Trump comes beneath them, makes them feel smarter the more he talks to them, makes them feel as if the things they've been discussing between themselves, their wives, with their family, at the work site, at the bar, are now the sort of revealed wisdom of American politics, things that they've been kicking around for 10 or 15 years. Yeah. Trump pulls that beneath them, lifts them up, and makes them feel as if now they're the smart people who have been ignored for all this time. That attaches them at a very deep psychological level to Trump. And people who don't appreciate that, mean take it seriously, are missing something.
Quoting from the article again, another problem with rural Christian white Americans is that they're racist. And I'm not talking about white hood wearing, cross burning, lynching racists, although some of them are. I'm talking about people who deep down in their hearts truly believe that they're the superior race because they're white. Their white God made them in his image, and everything else in a less than perfect version is flawed and cursed. Speaking about the writer here, the religion in which I was raised taught this. Even though they've backtracked on some of their more racist declarations, many still believe the original claims. Non-whites are the color they are because of their sins, or at least the sins of their ancestors. Blacks don't have dark skin because of where they lived and evolution. They have dark skin because they are cursed. God cursed them for a reason. And if God cursed them, treating them as equals would be going against God's will. It's really easy to justify treating people differently if they're cursed by God and will never be as good as you no matter what they do because of some predetermined status. Once you have this view, it's really easy to lower the outside group's standing at acceptable level of treatment. I remember learning as a Mormon that prior to, I believe it was 1980, they didn't allow African Americans into the church. Why? Because they have dark skin. Do they hate people with dark skin? Because they believed this. The reason African Americans had dark skin was because, and this is true, they have the mark of Cain. It's right there, written all over their black skin. They've got the mark of Cain. But of course, you have black drivers, you know, black fast food workers. You got black people on TV, you know, you got black comedians. And so they said, you know what? Okay. The church made a calculation. And they said, you know what? Those people have money too. So what we should do is we should allow them into the church because they have money too. I'm pretty sure they just want to seem less racist. But there's a thing in Mormonism called tithing, which is where you give 10% of your income. Man, y'all complain about taxes, but 10% of your income. And they go, don't worry, because Jesus is going to give it back to you. And I remember being at the church, and I'm on a fixed income. We have welfare. And the church would still say, kick us down 10%. Jesus will make sure that you get it back. Quoting here, because rural Christian white Americans will not listen to educated arguments supported by facts that go against their fundamentalist belief systems from outsiders, any change must come from within. Internal change in these systems does happen, but it happens infrequently and always lags far behind reality. This is why they fear change so much. They aren't used to it. Of course, it doesn't really matter whether they like it or not. Like evolution and climate change, even though they don't believe it, it's going to happen whether they believe it or not. Another major problem with a closed-off fundamentalist belief system is that they're susceptible to propaganda. All belief systems are to some extent, but fundamentalist systems are even more so because there are no checks and no balances. If bad information gets in, it doesn't get out because there are no internal mechanisms to guard against it. It usually ends up very damaging to the whole. So recently we had the Values Voter Summit. Values Voter. What does that mean? Well, what is a value? The Value Voter Summit is, of course, the religious folks. And let me say this up front. And when I say up front, I mean one third of the way through the show. I don't have a problem with people having a belief system. I don't have a problem with you having a religion, belonging to a religion, proselytizing for your particular religion. I don't have a problem with that. But your belief system is not my belief system. and it likely never will be. And if it ever did become my belief system, that is a choice that I have to make on my own. You don't get to take your belief system, your holy book, your invisible sky god, and write them into my laws, and then use that as an excuse for exercising cruelty on my countrymen. So we had the Value Voter Summit. Mike Pompeo sits down with Andrea Mitchell for an interview. And she's asking questions about the Value Voter Summit. And of course, he's the Secretary of State, so she's asking Secretary of State type questions. And just as he's about to leave the interview, she says, well, this Kavanaugh thing is kind of big right now. I would like to ask you, Secretary Pompeo, what do you think about this whole Kavanaugh thing before you head to the Value Voter Summit, by the way?
And you're going on in a few hours to the Value Voter Summit. And in speaking about American values, the president today has tweeted that if the attack against the accuser of Judge Kavanaugh were as serious as she says it is, that she should have reported it back 36 years ago when she was 15 years old. Is that the American value that we should be teaching our women?
I'm going to be talking today about religious freedom, the fundamental values that are enshrined in our Constitution with respect to the confirmation process for Judge Kavanaugh. I regret that this rose at the end. This was unfortunately sat on by a United States senator for weeks, as best I understand that, when there were confirmation hearings, a chance for Judge Kavanaugh to explain himself to them in private settings and in public settings, and instead a United States senator chose not to undertake that. I regret that. I think it's unfortunate. I think the president has said pretty clearly we hope the process will move forward fairly and efficiently. And I'm pretty focused on making sure that America's foreign policy is executed in a way that keeps Americans safe.
So they're writing women out of the history books. And then, of course, when it comes to this woman sure waited a lot of decades before she said anything. Oh, and by the way, the woman senator that she said something to, it's her fault. But I'm going to go ahead and go on to my Value Voters Summit, and I'm going to tell a lot of other women what they need to think. Quoting here, without built-in protective functions like critical analysis, self-reflection, openness to counter evidence, and willingness to reevaluate any and all beliefs, bad information in a closed-off system ends up doing massive damage in a short period of time. Rural Christian white Americans have let anti-intellectual, anti-science, bigoted racists like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, and the Stepford Wives at Fox, and every evangelical preacher on television into their systems because these people tell them what they want to hear and they sell themselves as being like them. Gays cannot be allowed to get married. Why? Because they are a threat. Blacks protesting the killing of their unarmed friends and their families are a threat. Hispanics are doing the cheap labor on the farms and are somehow viewed as a threat. The black president is a threat. Muslims are a threat. The Chinese are a threat. Women wanting to be autonomous is a threat. The college educated are a threat. Godless scientists are a threat. Everybody who isn't just like them has been sold to them as a threat. And they've bought it. Hook, line, and grifting sinker. Since there are no self-regulating mechanisms in their belief systems, these threats only grow over time. This is why the idea that Democrats have to understand and find common ground with rural America is misguided and a complete waste of time. When a 2,700-year-old book that was written by uneducated pre-scientific people subject to translation innumerable times and edited with political and economic pressures from popes and kings is given higher intellectual authority than facts arrived at from a rigorous, self-critical, constantly reevaluating system that can and does correct mistakes, no amount of understanding, respect, or evidence is going to change their minds or assuage their fears. A significant number of rural Americans believe that President Obama was in charge when the financial crisis started. Clearly, he was not. An even number, a higher number, believe that the mortgage crisis was a result of the government forcing banks to give loans to unqualified minorities. My God. It doesn't matter how untrue these things are. They're the gospel in rural America. And why reevaluate your beliefs and voting patterns when so many scapegoats are available? Especially when all of those scapegoats just happen to be brown or women.
We will hear and should hear from Dr. Ford on Thursday as planned. Then we should vote. There should be no more frivolous approaches towards the United States Senate or towards this confirmation process.
It's an interesting use of the word frivolous. This woman that came forward that is standing in the way of us putting our guy on the Supreme Court so that he can immediately start making decisions that benefit only rich white males. The fact that some woman would come forward and stand in the way of us putting him on the court, how dare she? These frivolous stop. Frivolous was about the nicest thing that they said about this woman, because Mitch McConnell straight up went for it. This is a dang gum smear campaign by the liberals.
Smear campaign has hit a new low. But I want to be perfectly clear about what has taken place. Senate Democrats and their allies are trying to destroy a man's personal and professional life on the basis of decades-old allegations that are unsubstantiated and uncorroborated. That, Mr. President, is where we are. This is what the so-called resistance has become. A smear campaign, pure and simple, aided and abetted by members of the United States Senate.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take just a teeny tiny break right here because I need to go throw up. But of course, we're going to get into what happened this week in the second half of the show.
On today's program, we will learn what a vagina ghetto is.
So that is what is referred to as a teaser. And what a heck of a teaser. And that's the way old Rushbo opened his show when it was learned that this woman was going to go ahead and go before the Senate. And then, of course, when another accuser came out and said that Kavanaugh was and Mark Judge were present at parties where gang rapes were taking place.
Greetings to you, music lovers, thrill seekers, and smut engagers all across the fruited plain. Rush Limbaugh here behind the Golden EIB microphone with apologies in advance for where the left and the Democrats are taking the content of this program. Right smack dab into Smut Central. Right smack dab into the filthiest, grimiest gutter you can find and whatever is beneath it. On today's program, we will learn what a vagina ghetto is.
So how did the Democrats and all of their magic and wonder bring us into the gutter? By the way, it's not a Democratic thing. It's not a Democratic ploy. We don't sit around in dark rooms and with candlelights and just take our fingertips and bounce them off. No. This didn't happen because of the Democrats. This happened because Brett Kavanaugh appears that he thought it might be a fabulous idea when he was pissed drunk to try to rape somebody. But no, it's those goddamn Democrats and their stupid, stupid Me Too movement. Yeah, that really happened.
And they're thinking this woman is obviously cannot be challenged. She's the accuser. It's the Me Too movement. Whatever she says, it has to be accepted because we believe the victims. We think women don't lie in these circumstances. And so,
yeah, we do. We tend to believe the victims. We don't believe that people like to do this, even to stop a Supreme Court nomination, because they like getting harassed and they like having to move out of their house, which incidentally has two doors. We'll get to that in a minute. Of course, no one likes getting death threats and nobody likes being screamed at on the street. Nobody likes being doxxed on the internet. No one likes having their email and their banking systems hacked into. Nobody likes that stuff. But if it is in the interest of stopping a Supreme Court nomination, then ladies and gentlemen, this is the Democrats' Hail Mary.
The one thing I think it's probably safe to say is that the Democrats knew they were losing. Ballsy Ford had bombed out. It didn't pan out the way they want. And in the Ramirez stories, they weren't moving the needle, because both were designed to make Kavanaugh cave or Trump cave. Trump pull the nomination, Kavanaugh to say to hell with this. That didn't happen. I think this is the Hail Mary. Avenatti with this babe in the rape trains is the Hail Mary.
This babe and the rape trains. So what's happening here? As I mentioned in the previous segment, this is one of these guys, Hannity, Limbaugh, Levin, Coulter. So now that they have spoken to all of those anti-intellectual Trump voters, those people who do not believe anything that does not come from inside of their belief system, you know, from the people that are inside the bubble that they trust, these radio hosts and television hosts and conservative writers, conservative think tanks have told everybody what they are supposed to think about what is coming up. So what is happening here? Quoting here from an article written in November of last year, so almost a year ago, President Donald Trump, quoting here, this comes from Megan Hoyer and Catherine Lucy. And the headline is, Trump choosing white men as judges, the highest rate in decades. President Donald Trump is nominating white men to America's federal courts at a rate not seen in 30 years, threatening to reverse a slow transformation toward a judiciary that reflects the nation's diversity. So far, 91% of Trump's nominees are white and 81% are male, according to the Associated Press. Three out of every four are white men, with African Americans and Hispanics in the mix. The last president to nominate a similarly homogenous group was George W. Bush. The shift could prove to be one of Trump's most enduring legacies. These are lifetime appointments, and Trump has inherited both an unusually high number of vacancies and an aging population of judges. That puts him in a position to significantly reshape the courts that decide thousands of civil rights, environmental, criminal justice, and other disputes across the country. The White House has been upfront about its plans to quickly fill the seats with conservatives and has made clear that the judicial philosophy tops any concerns about shrinking racial or gender diversity. Trump is anything but shy about his plans, calling his imprint on the courts an untold story about his presidency, and he's true. No one wants to talk about it, he says, but when you think about it, this has consequences for 40 years out. I remember thinking, okay, fine. Whoever gets in, it's only 4 years, maybe 8 years. Now we're talking about 30 years. Now we're talking about 40 years. And what's happening, the reason we have so many of these vacancies on the court is because conservatives held them open, because no effing way are they going to let the black guy fill those seats. And this one right here, this is the king. It's the motherlode. This is the behemoth. Whatever big ass word you want to hear. This is the fifth vote, the fifth conservatively reliable fascist vote on the court. Someone that votes against people, for corporations. This is the one, and we don't care if she got raped. We need this seat. Just like Roy Moore in the Senate. We don't care if he liked, if he tried to have sex with underage girls. We don't care. We need that Senate seat. We don't care. They say, Democrats believe the victims. Yeah, we do. Progressives tend to believe the victims because nobody likes to lie about that stuff. I think conservatives believe the victims too. but it doesn't care, because what's really important, what's more important than anything in the whole wide world, is that these white Christian men get on these courts and decide against people for corporations and F you. Christine Blasey Ford, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, came forward in the summer when she heard that Brett Kavanaugh might get on the Supreme Court during the summer. And the only thing she wanted to do after looking at the list, the short list of candidates, was to say, I don't care who you pick, just please, please, please do not pick Brett Kavanaugh. He tried to rape me, and somebody like that does not belong on the court. She reached out to the president. She reached out to the Senate. She reached out to the Judiciary Committee during the summer, and they ignored her. And then a Democratic senator from California decided to listen to her story. And now this is where we are. And you know whose fault it is? It's the Democrats, and especially that Democratic senator that decided to listen to her.
I don't have all the answers, and I don't remember as much as I would like to. But the details that about that night that bring me here today are the ones I will never forget. They have been seared into my memory and have haunted me episodically as an adult. When I got to the small gathering, people were drinking beer in a small living room, family room type area on the first floor of the house. I drank one beer. Brett and Mark were visibly drunk. Early in the evening, I went up a very narrow set of stairs leading from the living room to a second floor to use the restroom. When I got to the top of the stairs, I was pushed from behind into a bedroom across from the bathroom. I couldn't see who pushed me. Brett and Mark came into the bedroom and locked the door behind them. There was music playing in the bedroom. It was turned up louder by either Brett or Mark once we were in the room. I was pushed onto the bed, and Brett got on top of me. He began running his hands over my body and grinding into me. I yelled, hoping that someone downstairs might hear me, and I tried to get away from him, but his weight was heavy. Brett groped me and tried to take off my clothes. He had a hard time because he was very inebriated and because I was wearing a one-piece bathing suit underneath my clothing. I believed he was going to rape me. I tried to yell for help. When I did, Brett put his hand over my mouth to stop me from yelling. This is what terrified me the most and has had the most lasting impact on my life. It was hard for me to breathe, and I thought that Brett was accidentally going to kill me. Both Brett and Mark were drunkenly laughing during the attack. They seemed to be having a very good time. Mark seemed ambivalent, at times urging Brett on, and at times telling him to stop. A couple of times I made eye contact with Mark and thought he might try to help me, but he did not. During this assault, Mark came over and jumped on the bed twice while Brett was on top of me. And the last time that he did this, we toppled over and Brett was no longer on top of me. I was able to get up and run out of the room. Directly across from the bedroom was a small bathroom. I ran inside the bathroom and locked the door. I waited until I heard Brett and Mark leave the bedroom, laughing, and loudly walk down the narrow stairway, pinballing off the walls on the way down. I waited, and when I did not hear them come back up the stairs, I left the bathroom, went down the same stairwell, through the living room, and left the house. I remember being on the street and feeling an enormous sense of relief that I had escaped that house and that Brett and Mark were not coming outside after me. Brett's assault on me drastically altered my life. for a very long time. I was too afraid and ashamed to tell anyone these details. I did not want to tell my parents that I, at age 15, was in a house without any parents present, drinking beer with boys. I convinced myself that because Brett did not rape me, I should just move on and just pretend that it didn't happen. Over the years, I told very, very few friends that I had this traumatic experience. I told my husband before we were married that I had experienced a sexual assault. I had never told the details to anyone, the specific details, until May 2012 during a couples counseling session. The reason this came up in counseling is that my husband and I had completed a very extensive, very long remodel of our home, and I insisted on a second front door, an idea that he and others disagreed with and could not understand. In explaining why I wanted a second front door, I began to describe the assault in detail.
In halting, emotion-choked testimony, all of us were just riveted, listening, seeing her face, hearing her voice. And then, of course, those who say that the Democrats just made this up can look at pictures of Dr. Ford's house online. And the woman, yeah, she has two front doors because escape has become paramount to everything. I, too, and I'm not going to get into it, but I, too, am a victim. I didn't put a second door in the front of my house. We all deal with it differently. But for me, what that meant was always finding a way out. The minute I walked into a building, and I'm not a fire inspector, but the minute I walk into a building, I immediately assess, first of all, who's around me, how many of them there are, how tall they are. Could I take them? Am I planning on beating people up? No, but I might need to get around them. Windows, doors, walls. Sometimes I will just walk through a place just so I know where everything is in case I need to escape at a moment's notice. There was a time in my life where I would keep a bag somewhere in the house that all the things that I might need if I need to escape from this house at any given time. The house is on fire. If I need to get away from a threat, I grab that bag and I go. Let's get out my wallet. Let's get out my keys. This is the days before cell phones. I haven't done it recently. You know, it might have a light snack in it. It's going to have a notebook for me to write in. And I'll be gone. Jump on public transportation. Jump on a Greyhound bus. Gone. Every single room I go into, I'm always looking for an escape route. The fastest way out. Why? In case I face a threat. And I don't know what that threat is going to be. But where does this fight or flight response come from? It comes from my abuse. My abuse happened over 35 years ago. But even now, right here, right now, as a 40-year-old man, I still assess every single room I go into, every single place I go. I'm always looking for the escape route. And when the threat, if a threat prevents itself, I immediately know how I'm going to put my plan into place. That sucks.
So more specifically, claustrophobia, panic, and that type of thing.
Is that the reason for the second door, front door?
Correct.
Is claustrophobia?
Correct. Our house does not look aesthetically pleasing from the curb.
I see. And do you have that second front door?
Yes. It now is a place to host Google interns because we live near Google, so we get to and other students can live.
Can you tell us, is there any other way this has affected your life?
The primary impact was in the initial 4 years after the event. I struggled academically. I struggled very much in Chapel Hill in college. When I was 17 and went off to college, I had a very hard time, more so than others. forming new friendships and especially friendships with boys. And I had academic problems.
I can attest to all of those exact same things. Yes, I have found my way, but even now, I still struggle with so many of the lingering effects from the abuse. And this is probably the largest reason that I believe survivors. But of course, what has been happening is a terrorist, and I'm going to say it, a terrorist campaign. The fact that she's getting death threats, the fact that she's had to leave her house, the fact that she's being harassed online, the fact that she's being screamed at, the fact that pundits on television and on radio are calling her a liar, and how effing dare she try to take this seat away from Brett Kavanaugh? How dare she? There's two doors on her house. Well, Barack Obama was not born in this country. But wait a minute. There was a birth announcement put in the newspaper in Hawaii when he was born. Democrats put that birth announcement in there because they knew someday he would run for president, and this is all a part of their plan. And the two doors on Christine Blasey Ford's house, all a part of their plan.
How are you so sure that it was he?
The same way that I'm sure that I'm talking to you right now. It's just basic memory functions. Also, just the level of norepinephrine and epinephrine in the brain that sort of, as you know, encodes that neurotransmitter, encodes memories into the hippocampus. And so the trauma-related experience then is kind of locked there, whereas other details kind of drift.
So what you are telling us is this could not be a case of mistaken identity.
Absolutely not.
All a part of the plan. She's a liar. She's a fake. She's just trying to stop him from, and it just goes on.
What is the strongest memory you have? Strongest memory of the incident? Something that you cannot forget? Take whatever time you need.
Indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter. The uproarious laughter between the two. And they're having fun at my expense.
You've never forgotten that laughter. You've never forgotten them laughing at you.
They were laughing with each other.
And you were the object of the laughter?
I was, you know, underneath one of them while the two laughed. Two friends having a really good time with one another.
Indelible in the hippocampus. Epinephrine and norepinephrine. We have never had a more credible witness. Somebody who went on to become a psychology major. Somebody who holds two master's degrees and a PhD. We've never had a more credible and her life is turned upside down because she decided to come forward and she's terrorized by conservative pundits. Because how effing dare she stand in the way of a white man and a seat that is rightfully his.
Dr. Ford, as difficult as this experience must be, I want you to know that your courage in coming forward has given countless Americans the strength to face their own life-shattering past and to begin to heal their wounds. By example, you have brought many families into an honest and sometimes painful dialogue that should have occurred a long time ago. I'm sorry for what this has done to you and your family. No one should face harassment, death threats, and disparaging comments by cheap shot politicians simply for telling the truth. But you and your family should know that for every scurrilous charge and every pathetic tweet, there have been thousands of Americans, women and men, who believe you, support you, and thank you for your courage. Watching your experience, it's no wonder that many sexual assault survivors hide their past and spend their lives suffering in pain silence.
By this point, one senator had decided that he had had enough. How dare you do this to Brett Kavanaugh? How dare you? Quoting here from Alexandria Petrie over at the Washington Post. How dare you? How dare you do this to Brett Kavanaugh? How dare you deny him his seat? Listen. No, you listen. Do you know who Brett Kavanaugh is? Brett Kavanaugh went to Georgetown Prep. Brett Kavanaugh is an optimist who looks on the sunshine side of the mountain. Brett Kavanaugh's not yelling. You're yelling. If Brett Kavanaugh does not secure a lifetime appointment on the Supreme Court, this country will be in shambles. This is his birthright. Do you know how embarrassing it is for a Georgetown prep graduate to not be on the Supreme Court? They are literally 12% of the court. This is probably the worst indignity you can inflict on a human being.
Well, let me put it this way to my Republican colleagues. If this becomes the new standard, where you have an accusation for weeks, you drop it right before the hearing, you withhold from the committee a chance to do this in a professional, timely fashion, when they publicly say that their goal is to delay the vote, get the Senate back in 2018 to make sure he can't fill the seat, they're publicly saying that. I don't want to reward that kind of behavior. I think we've been very fair. And to my Republican colleagues, if you can ignore everything in this record, look at an allegation that's 35 years old, that's uncertain in time, place, date, and no corroboration, if that's enough for you, God help us all as Republicans, because this happens to us. It never happens to them. But let me tell you, my Democratic friends, if this is the new norm, you better watch out for your nominees.
All Brett is asking for is due process. Due process before he is deprived of his God-given right to a seat on the highest court in the land, where he will determine the fate of millions. Apply the standard you want to apply to your husband, brother, son. He should be allowed to be careless. He should be allowed to like beer. Brett likes beer. Who doesn't like beer? Brett isn't yelling. You're yelling. This is a con job. This is a farce. This, you should be ashamed. This is Brett's seat. The founders did not break from Britain and landed a white gentleman accused of sexual misconduct could not be given free rein over the lives of millions. If you give this woman credence, you will start a terrible trend. Think of all the careless prep school boys who will not be allowed to sit on the highest court in the land. Women who have suffered trauma will be allowed to get on planes willy-nilly, even though they're frightened. You're going to deny a qualified man the treasurer of the Keg Club. Do you hear him? He was Keg Club treasurer and a Renate alumni. How dare you deny a Keg Club treasurer and a Renate alumni a seat on the Supreme Court?
If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You've said that, not me. You've got nothing to apologize for. When you see Sotomayor and Kagan, tell them that Lindsey said hello, because I voted for them. I would never do to them what you've done to this guy. This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy. Are you a gang rapist?
No.
I cannot imagine what you and your family have gone through. Boy, y'all want power. God, I hope you never get it. I hope the American people can see through this sham.
Are you going to believe her, America, over him, America? You heard the woman. She doesn't even like to fly, and yet she flew here. Doesn't remember all the details of the evening, whereas Brett kept a calendar like his father before him. He is not emotional. You are emotional. No, you listen. If this is going to be how we behave, if we're going to believe this woman, if you're going to let her stand there and destroy his life, well, not his life technically, nor his freedom, just his chance to be on the highest court in the land, then what kind of country are we going to be? They're going to drag him in front of all these other men and deny him a seat on the Supreme Court, and he will have to walk home confused and disoriented, and he will have to live with the feeling that he is not on the Supreme Court for as long as he lives. Whenever he gets on a plane and sits in that seat, it will only remind him of the seat that he is not in.
To my Republican colleagues, if you vote no, you're legitimizing the most despicable thing I have seen in my time in politics. You want this seat? I hope you never get it. I hope you're on the Supreme Court. That's exactly where you should be.
And I hope that the American people will see through this charade. And I wish you well. And I intend to vote for you. And I hope everybody who's fair-minded will.
This is oppression, to be denied power over others. If that's not what this is, don't tell me. He should be given exactly as much benefit of the doubt as we would not give a black man who was shot in his own apartment by police. He deserves it. It's his birthright. He went to Georgetown Prep.
Did you watch Dr. Ford's testimony?
I did not. I planned to. I planned to. I planned to, but I did not. So I was preparing mine.
It is true. No man should be deprived of his life, liberty, or deciding seat on the highest court in the land without due process. This should be his. The right to decide the fates of millions is one a man like him is born with. One of those inalienable rights, and it should not be taken from him without beautiful due process. Now his world is falling apart. Now he's being forced to go over his high school behavior with a fine-tooth comb. This isn't fair. This is scrutiny. This demand to account. He deserves this power. Give it to him. Stop asking him all these questions. Stop. Stop trying to slow this train down. This train had better get where it's going or something bad is going to happen. Stop saying things. Shh, be quiet. Stop resisting Brett Kavanaugh. Stop trying to stop him. No, listen, listen. He deserves this. Listen, you don't deserve this. America doesn't deserve Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. If this is how America is going to behave, it doesn't deserve Brett Kavanaugh at all. And something amazing happened yesterday. I'm recording on Saturday the 29th. My plan was to record on the 28th until something super effing amazing happened. Brett Kavanaugh was voted out of committee. And then Senator Jeff Flake, who had said he was going to vote for Kavanaugh, he was confronted in an elevator by two women. I've run out of time. I can't get to the rest of the clips. But when he was confronted by these two women, the look on his face, he knew he had effed up. He knew something had to change. And he knew, at the very least, we had to have an FBI investigation. And after all this time, Democrats asking over and over, we just want an FBI FBI, FBI, FBI. Brett kept saying, whatever the panel wants, whatever the panel wants. Well, what the panel wants is to put you on the court without any due process. If they didn't have to have a hearing, they wouldn't have had a hearing. They would have just thrown you up there. They don't care. But these two women went up to Jeff Flake when he was getting in an elevator. They knew he could be swayed because he's not running for re-election. And they were able, by telling their stories to him, they were able to change his mind and likely change the entire course of history. What has happened through this entire process is really nothing short of amazing. And the way people have been protesting and calling and writing and sending hangers to the offices of Murkowski and Collins, it's been amazing. We've been fighting like hell to make sure that this accused rapist does not get on the Supreme Court. But allow me to remind you what might be a little bit better than that, so that we don't have to march in the streets, so that we don't have to pound on these officers, so we don't have to stop a sitting senator in an elevator to tell him our stories of sexual assault. You know what would work out way better is if people decided to turn out to vote and made sure that these men, that these rapist sympathizers don't get on the Supreme Court. Vote for men who are not rapist sympathizers themselves. The United States Republican Party. Make sure that they don't get into the Senate and are not allowed to put accused rapists on not just the highest court in the land, but any federal seat. I say it at the end of every show. Voting's a pain in the ass, Melvin. But you know what's a bigger pain in the ass? Having to corner a senator in an elevator and tell him your story of sexual assault to make sure that an accused rapist doesn't get on the Supreme Court. I'm glad they did it. If I ever meet those women, I'm going to hug them so tight they're going to stop breathing for a moment. Because what they did was amazing and it needed to happen. But all of this could have been avoided if we simply took part in our democracy. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on the Fire You Can't Put Out, our official home, tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us, facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available on both the iTunes Store and at the Google Play Store. Just search for the Fire You Can't Put Out. Also, subscribe so you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing. Special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, militant feminist, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.